Well now listeners, it's a lovely Sunday afternoon here, and you know where I am? I'm out and about. I'm in Knockadoon, and I'm ashamed to say, I'd say it's been about 30 years since I was in Knockadoon, and I'm just bowled over by the beauty of it. And I'm with a man that many of you know very well from his excellent contributions on CRY, and that's Tom Harrington, who's a native of this area. Tom, it's lovely to have you on Community Radio, y'all, in your own native place, so to speak.
That's right, Tom, and listen, thanks for calling out. You know, it's a great honour for me to be able to speak about these places that a lot of people probably in my generation would know and remember, and obviously the locals will know and remember. But there's a few stories that I just want to tell you about all the area, and I suppose just for the listeners,
hear the sea now.
They will indeed.
And it's, where are we actually, Tom, just to locate?
Well, at the moment now, Tom, for the listeners, we are standing looking down on top of Glenawilling Beach, although I would call it a strand because we never really called it a beach, but it's a small cove, a beautiful spot in the summertime in calm weather. But that's where we're standing at the moment, Tom. So we're roughly about... You could say less than a quarter of a mile from the signal tower, or the castle as we know it locally here in Knockadoon. So that's where we're standing at the moment, Tom, and hopefully we'll head back east towards the signal tower, and along the way there'll be different things we'll stop and chat about: fishing rocks with Irish names, and also methods of fishing long ago, my mother's time, and how they used to prepare for the winter and try and get fish during the August and the September. And we'll be walking along, and we'll stop along the way, and we'll chat about different various things.
Is that Ballycotton in the distance?
That's it, Tom. Ballycotton lighthouse, that's correct. You're roughly, as the crow flies, you're probably about a mile, maybe 2 miles, standing here, but that we're on the southern side of Knockadoon Head. And as you can imagine, Tom, we're very, very lucky today that it's such a lovely day. Normally we couldn't stand here with wind, but like I said, today is a lovely day for this job, and I'm delighted you came out, Tom, and welcome to the area.
Thanks very much, Tom. Tom, as we're looking over this beautiful... This is the Atlantic, I take it now.
Well, I suppose officially, Tom, it would be called the Celtic Sea.
The Celtic Sea.
Yeah, because okay. I suppose it is... if you looked at your mapping and the British Isles and all that, yeah, it would be known as the Celtic Sea.
And but we can see miles and miles of sea, listeners. We can see beautiful headlands here. It's absolutely fantastic. We recommend everybody to come and see it. And Tom, we're on a path, and I think the path itself now, just tell our listeners a little bit about the construction of this wonderful path.
Well, the path came about, or the walkway, I suppose, now, Tom, came about from an idea that KEP, which is Knockadoon Enhancement Project, came up with a couple of years ago. That we decide that we have such a beautiful walk, that we decide, or such a beautiful area, I suppose, where we're standing now, Tom, you could not walk because it was covered in furze bushes and heather. So we decided then that, look, we'd open it to the Joe public to be able to walk this area and see what we see every day. I suppose we take it for granted because we live here, but we said we'd open it back, and I think we opened it, I'm fairly certain it was November 2018 or 2019, either one of the two. And we started on the walk. We started over at the signal tower, which is the castle in Knockadoon, and we headed west, and we broke out below here in Glenawilling Beach, and it took us a couple of weeks, and it was all voluntary, Tom. There was no contribution from nobody.
We did it ourselves,
yeah. Well, the local community.
Absolutely. Congratulations, listeners. After hearing this, sometime you'll all have to come. And how long is it around?
No, well, we started in roughly, I think it was November 2019, Tom.
Yeah.
So it would be roughly 2 years now, last November.
Well done.
But it's been used. A lot of the listeners listening today or tonight, Tom, will have walked it already. And every time I come here, there's always somebody different coming along here. And the amount of people that you know, if they know you're a local, they say, what a fantastic walk. That's At the moment, we're looking now, like I said, down in Glenawilling Strand. And Tom, you've been to Clare, you've been to Kerry. Tis as good as any of them.
Brilliant. It is, listeners now, and that's no exaggeration. I know Tom is a local, and I have been to all these scenic places, particularly in Kerry. And it matches and betters many of them, I must say now. So we'd recommend you all to come sometime. And we'll give you directions again later on at the end of the programme, how best to get here.
So Tom, just a few stories, I suppose, about the area we're looking at now. And I'll start with Longo. They used to, my mother-in-law, Mercinner, she used to come down from Ballykilty and kill it because she had an aunt living in that grey house there in the distance, Tom.
Okay.
Which was called Willie Hyde's. And she used to come down there during the summer, and she always taught me the story about fishing with Willie Hyde himself. And they used to fish for pollock, Tom. They used to come down a pet. Now, listeners, it's very hard to describe it, but I presume the pet is gone, because now looking at it, it would be very hard to get down there. But there's the farthest away point there, Tom, or Tommy, and that's called Willie Hyde's Corner.
Okay.
A great fishing spot now, right? And that time, they'd prepare for the winter by putting down a net from rock to rock, which was, you know, that doesn't happen anymore now. That only happened when I was a child, really, I'd say, and after that, they finished up. But they put it down, herself and Willie Hyde, she used to probably help them, and they'd leave it down for maybe two tides, or maybe one tide, and then they would check the net and hopefully have pollock that time. And she told me the pollock that time, Tom, they used to catch, I'm not exaggerating, Tom, they could be maybe a metre and a half long. Imagine they were that. Massive pollock. But that day has gone out, Tom. You'll be lucky now to get a small pollock, never mind the big fella. But what they used to do then was they used to salt them for the winter in barrels, I'd say. And you'd say, God almighty, how did they eat that? But, you know, times were tough back in the 40s and the 50s. And, you know, you had to prepare for the winter for food. And that was one way they did it. They had plenty of fish and they used to salt the pollock. And just in front of us here, Tom, there was another man did the same thing down here, just straight in front of us on the east side of the cove, you could say. And his name was James Wall. And James lived just back of us here, Tom, and he had the same idea again. And to this day, there's a rock down there with a steel bracket where he used to tie the net off of. And to this day, it is still there. But the reason I'm telling you about this, Tom, is just so that people know and the younger generation know that, you know, life wasn't all about PlayStations and computers and food and McDonald's and all that. Back in those days, you had to go and prepare for the winter and get as much food as possible ready for the winter.
And Tom, it's Glenwilling Beach, is that where
Glenwilling? Well, the fancy name would be Glenwilling Beach. We always knew it as Glenwilling Strand. Because, as you can see, Tom, it's not a big beach.
No.
It's a total gravel beach. Some beautiful small gravel down there now, lovely clean little pebbles. And, you know, they do swim there during the summer. They do, Tom, yeah. They do. No, it's a kind of a secluded, quiet spot that people kind of get down to. But you can get down from the main road there. But they do, Tom, they use it a lot, yeah.
But even today, Tom, on this lovely day here in December 2021, the 5th of December, listeners, that's when we're here. There are loads of people.
There is, actually. Isn't there? Yeah, if you can see down there, Lord Tom, there's about what, 10 or 12 people down there.
Yeah, amazing.
So, like, it just goes to show that it is popular and it's getting more so popular, you know.
And, Tom, can I ask you now, just in general, when the weather gets bad here, would the water come right up the cliff here?
Not right up the cliff, Tom, but where we're standing now, you'd find it hard to stand. And if you came out here now next Tuesday, Tom, there's supposed to be a bit of a
terrible
storm, yes.
Yeah.
The worst I've seen here, Tom, was Ophelia back in October 2018. That was frightening, Tom. That was really, really bad. But thank God we haven't got it as bad since. But we do. Every couple of years, Tom, you get a bad storm. And the one thing I worry about down here, Tom, with our houses and everything, is the wind. The one thing that can damage it is the wind. We're not worried about frost or snow, but the wind can seriously give us damage down here. But today, Tom, we're far from that.
And just looking around, there's quite a lot of houses here on the headland, isn't there, Tom?
That's right, Tom. Yeah, like, I mean, I suppose, you know, when you look at the houses across from us there now, there's a lot of strangers after moving into the area that have taken up residency. But then again, there's a lot of people that have lived here all their lives, right. and their offsprings have decided to build houses here.
Which is great, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a thriving community, and, you know, we're very proud of the area we have. I suppose, Tom, as we're just here, before we go away from this area, you know, as you know, Tom, salmon fishing was very strong back in the 70s, the 80s and the 90s. And then, unfortunately, they decided to stop driftnet fishing. But this area here now, Tom, was one of the prime spots. So from that point there, Willie Hyde's Corners, right, that was a prime spot. And the other prime spot we'll be talking about later on is the castle over at the signal tower. But the salmon fishermen used to come from Knockadoon. I was one of them myself. With a man, Lord have mercy on him, a great friend of mine, and I was so sad when he passed away a couple of years ago, and that was Mickey Welsh, as we know him. And as many of the day, Tom, many of the summer's morning, at 7 o'clock in the morning, we'd be in right in there in the corner, having a cup of tea and a sandwich of a summer's morning, Tom, and you talk about heaven, that was heaven, right? But there was bad days too, Tom, with bad weather, but that was a spot there now, so they'd shoot the nets from there, Tom, out in a kind of a southeasterly direction, maybe 20 nits, and then this could be maybe over 100 yards long, and they'd shoot them out there. And normally you'd get the salmon coming from the west, which would be the Ballycotton direction, and then later on the year you might come get them coming from the east. But there was fierce, when the salmon were good in that Tom, like everything else, there was fierce competition for the good birds. And of course everybody wanted to get the good birds, and who'd be there first in the morning or who'd be there later on. And there was a bird there, Tom, as we're looking out there now, and then there could be another bird here, Tom, in a local rock called Drocarrig. It's a black rock, listeners. If you ever walk in the walk, you'll just see it straight out there. So there could be a nit shot out there, and then there'd be another nit halfway between here and the castle shot out as well, and you could have four or five strings of nits and four or five different boats. But everybody got their quota of fish, and everybody was happy at the end of the day. And that went on from the mid-70s, I suppose, up to the end of the 90s. And then the ban came in, and that was the end of that.
And is it all gone now? All the fishing?
All salmon gone? Fishing is gone now, Tom, yeah. Salmon drift net fishing is gone. Finished.
And are there individual stocks of fish there that you're aware of?
We don't know, Tom. I mean, you know, it was banned because the salmon stocks were so-called getting scarce and getting low. But, like, the small little boats, like, that were here in Ballycotton and down Ardmore, I mean, they weren't killing the massive amount of salmon at all. The massive amount of salmon, Tom, were being killed below in Kerry, up the west coast, with big boats with a lot of nits, right? You could have nits going from here to Ballycotton kind of thing. And they did all the damage. The poor old local man here, he wasn't doing any harm. But unfortunately, when the ban came, it came across the board, and that was the end of that. And it was the end of a tradition, Tom. It was the end of an era, because, like, okay, the fishing along the west, along here now, Tom, only came over here in the late 70s. Normally it was smaller birds below Knockadoon Head, but it's only in the late 70s, mid 80s, that they started coming over here and catching the fish over here. But Tom, you come here of a summer's evening in August one time, or summer's morning in August one time, that place there would be full of boats with different four or five different birds fishing salmon. And that's all gone now, Tom,
isn't it?
And as I'm on that, Tom, right, the rock fishing here was savage popular as well. I mean, as a child, I rock fished here. People used to come from Millington, Castle Martyr, Yall, you name it, and they used to be able to walk along a path there, Tom, right down the bottom now, right? That path now is completely gone because obviously people are walking here now. And they used to fish off that rock there, which is called Drocarrig. I'm not great in the Irish, Tom, but Drocarrig, I presume Carrig is rock, is it?
Bedrock
is it? Yeah. Fair enough. But that was a very popular place, like that again over pollock and for mackerel. But that was one of the favourite places to fish now, and that was Drocarrig. There's beyond the point over Willie Hyde's point, there's another place called Pullafuca. Like that again, Tom, probably an Irish version of something. I'm not too sure what it is, but it's called Pullafuca.
Pole of the fairies or something.
Fair enough.
Is a fairy.
And that was beyond Willie Hyde's corner there.
Oh, yeah. So Willie Hyde actually made quite an impression locally, didn't he?
Ah, he did. And I tell you, there's a programme on Willie Hyde, Tommy, because he was a member of the old IRA.
All right.
And during the Civil War and those years, he was marched to Cork.
Okay.
So there's not a story there, as the man says.
Are there Hydes, relatives of that good man, still living in the area?
No, they're nearly all gone. They're nearly all gone. There was a man, Lord of Mercy, and a man, he died a few months ago there, a man called Patrick Power. He would have been related to him, but unfortunately he passed away. So really, at the moment now, there probably is nobody descendant from him, I would say.
All right.
No, I know. We are slightly, I think, as far as I can remember now, but I suppose I'd be afraid of continuing in case I'm telling a lie, but I think there's some descendancy there. I think my grand aunt could have been his sister, but we won't go any further in case I get it wrong.
And so that's it, Tom. The farms that are here, just for our listeners that can't see them, what's the main type of farming in this area at the moment?
As you can see, Tom, in front of you there now, there's a sheep farmer there just straight in front of us. No, he's not a native to the area. He's only in the area about 5 or 6, 7 years. He does sheep farming there. He bought that land there back a few number of years ago. And then there's another man does a bit of veg farming. I feel like Sean Irvin. He does a lovely bit of veg farming, and he's beautiful veg. And I'm sure a lot of people in New Orleans around the area have sampled his veg. And Tommy, that's where it comes from, just up there. Cool. I buy it myself. Carrots, parsnips, spuds, turnips, and you wouldn't get nicer. So that's Sean Irvin. He's up there. So that's basically it. And the rest of the area, and Tom, is mostly tillage, you know, but there's a lot of out in Conacre, and a local farmer up the road there has it out in Conacre. So that's what's happening here. But the one time here, Tom, all this area was full of beet farming.
Wow.
And corn. yeah. and any kind of a root, turnips, spuds, but it's all gone, Tom. There's nobody, it's nearly all grass now, Tom, and barefoot a couple that we see here in front of us.
Listeners, we're doing a very special program here today. We're at Glenewilling Beach, Glenewilling Strand. We're looking out over the Atlantic. Ballycotton Life House is in the distance, and it's just a fantastic scene altogether. You'll have to come and see it. And Tom, would you tell them the story? Was there a mine? You were going to tell me a little story
about
Willie's Rock.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for reminding you of that, Tom. Like that again, when my mother used to come down the war years between 1940 and 45, she often told me that she used to be visiting her auntie Lizzie Hyde, and there was one night or one morning in a there was a mine struck Willie's Corner there, Willie Hyde's Corner, right?
A World War II mine.
Yes, indeed.
Imagine that.
And there was a lot of mines, and we'll be discussing that later on, Tom. Came in from the Celtic Sea that time, because there was minefields laid in the Celtic Sea. But one day and there, one night, I'm not too sure which it was, a day or night, it actually exploded. It hit the rock and exploded. And she told me that there was wear up in the dresser, the old dressers, Tom, as you know, it was have all the wear. And normally the wear that was up there was the good wear for the stations and the priests when he'd come, but the shock of the explosion knocked all the wear off the dresser down the ground and shattered.
And she told me that. Thankfully nobody.
No, God, but a big fright, obviously.
I can imagine this.
You can imagine, but I suppose that was the start of the war, Tom, and maybe there was one or two more exploded after that.
Yeah.
But there was a man living up the road here. I think he was in the LDF, Tom, right, which is what became the FCA afterwards, right?
I remember. Yeah.
But they used to be sent around the coast here to shoot the mines with 303 rifles, which were the army rifle at the time. His name was George Sloan, and he shot mines out at the sea for them to explode.
So many of them,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. Well, you might get the odd one, and he'd be asked because he was a member of the LDF, I think.
Yeah.
And one of the mines, he actually, I don't know how he got it afterwards, or did the army decommission it or whatever, but they gave it to him, the shell of the mine. And for years and years, and it could be still there, but I think it's gone now. It was above in his yard, and as a child, I can remember looking at it. It was like an egg cup turned upside down twice, you know, that kind of way, oval shape. And that was a World War II mine. But there was a lot of stories about the mines, Tom. And like I said, as we get back further towards the lookout post, we'll discuss a little bit. But that's basically where we are, Tom. So if you want to, we can move. We'll start heading east for the listeners, and we'll see a couple of more fishing rocks, and we can just give you the names to them. And then we'll be heading over towards the locally we call it the Castle, Tom, right? But the official name is a Signal Tower, and a Napoleonic Signal Tower. So we'll be talking about that as we head back.
So listeners, we're talking to a lovely lady and gentleman who are here just doing the walk. Are you locals?
No, we're from further in towards the city. We're from Glanton.
Oh, okay, your first time here or a repeat?
Repeat.
And what would you say about the walk here that Tom and his committee
It's the light, it's the sea, it's the scenery, it's spectacular, it's beautiful.
You'd recommend it to all our listeners here in Community Radio.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really, this is my first time, and I was telling Tom, I'm bowled over by it, and I'm a local here.
Yeah.
You're enjoying it yourself, sir?
It's brilliant, it's fantastic, yeah. It's a lot of work gone into it. It's showing now, it's really maturing.
I remember walking it years ago when there was no path from, I can't remember where we started, but we went back to Gailin, and there's such a difference in it now. It's spectacular.
It's really lovely.
Yeah.
So enjoy your walk, and thanks very much for your chat. Thank you very much indeed. So Tom, we're a bit farther along the path now, and I was just noticing the lovely stone walls here, and you were telling me a little bit about it.
That's right, Tom. Well, where we are now for the listeners is we're directly, I suppose we're nearly, you could say we're nearly halfway now between Glenewilling Strand and the castle, the Signal Tower. And we've stopped here now at a stone wall, which is actually basically, Tom, the wall of a former dwelling house. And I suppose for people that are older than me from the Ballymacoda area, it would be known, and they probably would know the man that lived there, or his family came from here, right? And the people that lived here, Tom, were called the Murphys, right? Now you'd say Murphy, sure, there's millions of Murphys. But the Murphy he was long ago, Cashman's in Ballymacoda had a truck business. I'd say Eddie Cashman was his name. He had about five or six trucks. And that time he used to be drawing beet, which was fairly popular in the area at the time. And he had a driver, and his name was Tom Murphy. and Tom Murphy's came from this spot we're standing on now. Tom Murphy, Lord mercy, is long gone now, and so is Cashman's shop and Cashman's trucks. Who has the premises now is the Coleman family. They have a new daybreak shop there.
Yes.
So Tom came from this spot here, Tommy, and you know, it brings back great memories to me because whenever I come over the wall there now, you know, there was a farmhouse there. It's hard to believe it.
Imagine that.
A yard, and there was a pet up by my house into it. And the people that lived there, like I said, were the Murphys, right? Now, the parents' names, I haven't written down somewhere, but I can't come to the head. But I know that Tom Murphy drove a truck for Eddie Cashman back in the 70s. And the early 80s, this is where Tom came out of.
And are there any Murphys around us?
No, they're all gone again, I'd say. No, like that again, I mean, there could be relations maybe still going strong in England or somewhere, or America, or anywhere, Tom. But all I know is that that's the only Murphy I can think of. But the memories it brings back to me is that we had beat Longo, and that time, you know, you were small, a big truck coming to the yard and a big loader coming to the yard and loading beet into the truck and bringing it to Mall up to the sugar factory. You know, it was a kind of a big occasion when you're small and you're a child. And Tom Murphy, Allat Merson, used to be one of those drivers, and that's the area he came from now, Tom. And as you can see, it's actually a nice feature, Tom, on the walk. It's a lovely stone wall.
Lovely stone wall.
And I suppose like that again, we're so used to looking, we don't take much notice of it. But like you said, you spotted it actually when you came over the wall yourself, and you said, isn't that lovely? And that's the place there, Tom. So that's on the lens side of the pet. Now, Tom, we're at another fishing rock here. Now, actually, it's hard for us to see it now, this is what we'll describe it in there. It's another very fishing popular place towards the castle, and it's either Foigagaleen or Foilagaleen. I'm not too sure which is the right pronunciation, but it was a great place for mackerel. And like that again, I'll tell you another story about a local man when I was a child again. His name was Mikey Hurley, and Mikey lived just here behind us, Tom. His farmhouse was just the other side of that wall and the roadway. And Mikey was a great man for the mackerel. And every August, July, August, even I suppose maybe June, but mostly July, August, Mikey would always come down fishing the mackerel, right? And Mikey had a spot just below the forest there, Tom, and he used to sit inside there. He'd kind of had a bit of a little area he used to sit down. And you'd say, why was he sitting inside there? But what he was doing, he was watching the gulls and watching the signs when the mackerel would come in. Because Mikey was pushing on his years, and I suppose he'd not be walking all the way down to the bottom of the down to the rock when there was no need. So he'd sit there, and I'd come down as a child or a young fella, 10 or 12, 13 years of age, and I'd look over, and if Mikey was sitting there, I said to myself, there's no point in going down there now because there's no fish there. So I'd go over and I'd sit down with him, have a chat with him, and he'd be telling me old stories of long ago and all that kind of stuff. And like that again, when I come down to this spot, memories come flooding back of Mikey and sitting there watching for the mackerel and the gulls and all that kind of stuff. And he was a lovely man, and Lord rest him, and I hope he's good in heaven now.
That's a nice story, Tom. And we're looking out here as we're walking along the path, listeners, just to let you know, and you can see for miles. Tom, I've been interested in kind of whales and all of that.
Right.
Would you ever see whales or any large animals like
out in
the sea?
You would, Tom, and I'm very lucky myself. A couple of years ago there, we put on a bit of a balcony kind of a viewing area behind my garage, and I would have fierce interest now. During the winter months too, I'd go up there and I'd have a look out, and you'd see
the spouts.
You'd see the odd one. No, not all the time, but you would see one. You'd see a lot of dolphins, a lot of porpoises, that kind of stuff. You don't know what you're going to see some days.
And I can imagine the view probably changes the colour of the water, I don't imagine.
That's right. Well, of course, Tom, the colour of the water changes with the colour of the sky. So if there's a day where you have a lot of cloud, the sea is grey. If there's a day where you have kind of an evening, you have an orange sky, the sea is kind of orange. So, as you know, as a child, Tom, you often wondered, where did the sea get its colour? But the sea actually gets its colour from the atmosphere above it. So, but like looking out now, Tom, you were saying to me, you know, what are we kind of looking at? Well, I can say fairly certain, Tom, there's a ship now out in the horizon at the moment, right? If you were to take a straight line from that, your next stop would be France.
Imagine that.
You'd have to go, if you were to go this way, which is, we're walking on the path now, listeners, and we're kind of looking kind of southeast. The next thing you'd hit there would be the southwest coast of England.
Wow.
And if you were to go slightly more to our left and go straight that way, you'd hit the coast of Wales. So, but if you were to go this way, Tom, straight out now where we're looking out, go straight south, and keep going.
Yes.
The first place you probably would hit would be, we say, probably northwest France. Wow. Maybe Normandy kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lovely spot where we are now, Tom, and we're moving along. And shortly we'll be talking hopefully about the signal tower and the lookout post.
And Tom, you're telling me now, just going back a little bit there, I'm sure the listeners will be very interested. You did a spot of fishing yourself when you were younger, you were saying?
That's right.
Whose boat were you on?
I was on a boat, Tom, I said it earlier on, he was a great friend of mine, and as a child, I don't know how I got friendly with him, but I suppose he was just a nice man, and he always knew I had interest in the sea and fishing, and he used to bring me out in the boats, and then I started fishing with him, and that was Mickey Welsh. And of course, there was a family of the Welshes fishing. His brother Johnny was a great, great character, Johnny Welsh. His son is actually Martin Welsh, who was a great guitar player and had a band one time called The Images, Tom. You might have remembered them.
I've heard of The Images. We're stopped opposite a nice seat here, and it says, listeners, in memory of the Harrington family. Put up by your good selves, Tom.
That's right. Myself and my brother, Tom, we decided, with the permission of KEP, to put a seat here. You'd say, why in this area? Because I suppose, Tom, the easiest question to that answer is, we're directly opposite where my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents, I suppose the Harrington family, have been in this area. I can go back as far as 1834. I presume it can go back further than that again. So we just thought that it would be a nice thing to do. I suppose it's more my idea than anything else. And if anybody's on the walk, when they pass the seat, they'll see that. And look, a lot of people will know who the Harrington family are. Other people won't have a clue who they are, but they'll know that obviously that the Harrington family has something to do with this area here. And I just thought it was a nice thing to do. And look, if it's there in 50 years' time, it'll be in memory of me, Tommy. So, indeed. You know, I said I killed two birds with one stone.
Yeah. No, it's a lovely idea, actually, having the seats at regular spots along this wonderful walk.